going to be a good show today. What's going on? My name is Steve. This show is called Freight Broker Live. Today we are going to be talking about a whole pile of stuff. And for the faint of heart, don't watch this show today. Okay, today is going to be opinion. That's a privilege of owning my media brand. I could talk about whatever the hell I want. Today is going to have some opinion in it because I am pretty upset with just the way the industry is going right now. I'm upset with how people are perceiving things work. I'm upset with trade organizations being idiots. I'm upset with the industry right now. So I'm going to talk about it in depth. The first thing that I'm going to do, like I do in every day, is I'm going to talk about some of the news stories that I wrote that are on my website, freightbrokerlive.com. And well, myself, Ryan, Shannon, and all the other writers that I have now. Today, though, it's going to be different. So again, if you're soft, if you want to share this out on social media, that would be extremely helpful to me because I think it's something that a lot of people need to hear and a lot of people should hear it. So if you could share it out on Facebook, if you're watching it on YouTube, hit the like button, make sure you subscribe and follow and do all that stuff. If you're watching on LinkedIn, feel free to comment on YouTube because I won't see your comments if you watch it on LinkedIn because I'm not approved to stream there yet. Okay, so the very first thing, again, my name is Steve. This show is called Freight Broker Live. It is the only talk show that is run by an active freight broker, someone that lives, breathes, loves this industry through and through, the good and the bad, but I'm starting to not really like the bad as much. Well, I never really liked the bad, but it's starting to get to be more of a pain in the butt, this industry. Anyway, today we have, what is that, 460? I can't see it. Hold on. 454,615 confirmed coronavirus cases in the United States. 16,074 deaths in the United States. A lot. A lot, a lot. It's just something that's big and something that's going on. And I've talked about it in nauseam, so I'm not going to talk about that much right now because we can't. I mean, there's nothing new coming out. Yes, it's going to last for... Actually, I take it back. So going back to the news, here's something new. The government hasn't really said how long this thing is going to last, but the FMCSA yesterday extended the hours of service exemptions that they had in place, which is basically now until March 15th. So they're saying that, I guess, based on what I see, that means they're expecting this thing to last for another, what, 35 days? 35 days of being locked down, 35 days of business, essential, non-essential businesses being closed, 35 days of trucks not being able to make a decent living, 35 more days of trucks not being able to find food easily, and then trade organizations, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, trade organizations are actively working to put profit over driver safety, and I'll talk about that here in a second. Because it's literally one of the most absurd stories that I've ever written about, ever. So, and I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about TQL. There's a new lawsuit, a class action lawsuit. It's already certified because they have two parties. And they're going after TQL for the data breach violation. And I'll talk about that lawsuit. Man, it's sad. The whole industry's sad. I'm tired about hearing people complain and say, oh, it's all brokers' fault. That really, without being too harsh, everybody that's out there that says anything about, oh, this is all brokers' fault, you know, we're going to give it back to them and that brokers are evil people, all of you guys should not be truck drivers. That's the only thing, because all of you prove that you do not understand the trucking industry. To say that all brokers are stiffing it to the drivers and crap is absolutely bullshit. And it's such a stupid thing to say, and it shows that you don't really understand the market and the way it works. But we'll talk about that later, too. As you can tell, I'm a little riled up. So I'm going to skip ahead to this bull crap news article that I wrote about before. It's not a bullcrap article. It's a good article, but the subject of it is stupid. So if you go to my website, freightbrokerlive.com, you will see on the main page, there's an article called Opinion. Just days after the FHWA okays food trucks at rest stops to feed truckers, a truck stop association wants to stop it. Now, This is kind of crazy. So maybe you guys have heard of the NATSO. Well, neither have I. But apparently it's a trade organization made of truck drivers. Made up of truck stop owners. There's 200 plus corporations that own these truck stops. 1,700 member company. One of the things that's interesting is a couple of days ago, I published an article about the Federal Highway Administration issuing a notice to state departments of transportation suspending enforcement measures against states who allow food trucks at rest areas to feed truckers. Because as we all know, it's increasingly every day, it's increasingly harder for truck drivers to find food on the road. They can't go through drive-thrus. Even now, Burger King, you can, after that video went viral and they finally had to speak up. McDonald's has now an app where you could sit in their parking lot and do it, but the drivers can't get out and stretch their legs or do anything. You know, they're essentially confined to their truck, and which is just complete crap anyway. But there's no sit-down food. There's no sit-down restaurants. There's nothing. One of the interesting things, I don't know. I see comments. I don't know why you can't last, but other people can. Maybe try a different thing. Anyway, because I didn't. Yeah. Anyway, Laz just sent me a text message and said he could not comment. Anyway, so the Federal Highway Administration opened it up. So now food trucks. So in just in case you guys don't know what food trucks are, they're those little roach coaches that go around. They have hot food, breakfast food, drinks, all that stuff on their trucks. The little pickup trucks with the weird shiny metal box on the back. Those are called roach coaches, or they have the bigger food trucks, which you'll see all over the place anyway. So they basically made it so those guys can park at rest stops and then feed truckers. So truckers could buy meals. So they didn't necessarily have to get all the way off of the highway. They didn't have to go to truck stops and overpay for crappy ass food anyway. Well, the NATSO, which is a trade organization, like I said, that has 1,700 members of rest stops across the or of truck stops across the United States, decided that for some reason they wanted to write a letter that was designed to highlight that off-duty restaurants and food service operations are struggling to remain open with sales generally down north of 50%. If these businesses are unable to remain open, it will exacerbate the trucking community's concerns with respect to the convenient access of food options as they heroically deliver essential supplies during the COVID-19 pandemic. They wrote a letter to the Federal Highway Administration saying that they do not want roach coaches or food trucks at rest areas where they have vending machines. Because if so, clearly truck drivers are going to go and choose good food over crappy vending machine food. So they have made a petition with 10 other associations that have nothing to do with the trucking industry to try to make it so truck drivers have to go to truck stops to buy crappy food or buy overpriced crap from the vending machines. It is literally one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in a time where a trade organization as such is big that deals with 1,700 travel stations across the United States could really institute some change and some positive things for truckers at this point, right? You would think, when I first saw the letter, I was like, no way, this can't be real. What they're actually doing is, this is what I thought they were doing. When I first read the article, I was like, hey, they must be trying to figure out some way to help drivers, because this clearly does not help drivers at all. It clearly doesn't. What it does is says, hey, the truck stops, our members are more important than the driver that needs food. So instead of making it so food is readily accessible to the drivers, we want to shut it all down and make the drivers go to the truck stops where it's been reported showers don't work, bathrooms aren't clean, drivers still can't get any damn food there. It's absolutely one of the stupidest arguments I've ever heard in my life. And I will say that with 100% certainty. What they wrote, and this is what I wrote in my article. It's important to remember that these food truck operators are typically not big parts of big corporations and everything, just like these truck stops are, they are usually independently owned. So that's like a father, a husband, you know, someone that is operating and owning that food truck, that is making all the food to go in that food truck and then driving it all the way to a place. That is someone else's livelihood. So it's just so, it's such a stupid thing. I can't believe that any PR person said, hey, let's put this out. And to have 10 other associations that really have nothing to do with trucking, have them also put their logos on this, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. It doesn't make any sense at all. What they want, the NATSO letter hopes that the FHWA directive, the Federal Highway Administration directive, does not result in food service transactions being redirected to food trucks from nearby rest area vending machines. That is in the letter they wrote. So to them, it's more important for drivers to buy food from vending machines than it is to be able to get a hot meal. These are where, this is where you guys spend your money, truck drivers. This is where you spend your money. This is where you buy your overpriced diesel fuel. This is why, where you buy your $2.50 candy bars. This is where you buy your $5 loose leaf logbooks that you could buy online for 99 cents. This is the same. These are the same truck stops that charge you to park in their lot when we're in a national disaster. These are the same truck stops that charge you to take a shower. Doesn't make any sense to me at all. But hey, what am I? I'm a freight broker and we're all evil, according to most carriers out there. But I even wrote in my article, I say, I may be interpreting this wrong, but it seems the trade group would rather a driver eat from a vending machine than have access to a hot meal on a food truck. Because that is literally how stupid the argument sounds. It's crazy because these truck stop associations, you know what they really have the power to do? And this is going to blow your mind, right? So drivers, a big thing with truck drivers on the road right now is they're scared. I mean, they may not be scared about the virus, but these drivers are driving, delivering critical goods most of the time to hot zones, to places where they are going to potentially contract COVID-19. And then they live in their truck for weeks or months or however long at a time. Some do it permanently. And they have no access to medical care besides telecare or something like that. There's a bunch of different programs out there. You can go to a website and find them. But why didn't this FHWA say, hey, listen, let's take our 17 member locations and set it up so drivers can go and take a cold shower or a hot shower without, for free. We're not, or let's even better. Let's say, hey, drivers, yeah, if you're on critical goods, let's just say you want to do that and that you prove via bill lading, you don't have to pay for the stupid parking lot or the stupid parking charges that they all do. You know, all these, like TA has paid parking, and they talk about how they're all about truckers and they're trying to help out with COVID-19, and yet they're still charging people $30 to park their truck. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's kind of mind-blowing, but whatever. Here's one thing that's really, so this is what the NATSO is asking the Federal Highway Administration to do. We respectfully ask that you commit to not further expanding this non-enforcement guidance beyond food trucks during this epidemic. And once the state of emergency ends, immediately revert back to enforcing the longstanding ban on commercializing interstate rest areas. And I suppose they mean beyond the overpriced vending machines that some of their members control in these rest areas, which are commercializing rest areas. The whole thing's stupid. It's literally one of the stupidest arguments I've ever heard. And they would rather that food trucks operate solely at rest areas that are located on stretches of the interstate where there are no open food service operations in close proximity that are available to truck stops. It is literally, or to truck drivers, it is literally one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life. The stupidest things. Like, who thought this would be a good idea to put out when we're, as an industry whole, we are super concerned about what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks in terms of the industry. Rates have tanked. Businesses are closing. Companies are laying people off. Hundreds of you guys, well, maybe not the people that watch this, but hundreds of people are not going to be able to make it through this. Hundreds and hundreds of owner operators out there are going to lose their trucking companies because of this. Because of the COVID and because of the widespread and the fact that 60% of businesses across the United States are forced to close down. Logan Steakhouse, have you guys ever eaten at that steakhouse? It's super good. But they just fired all their furloughed employees, 16,000 of them, because they may not be able to reopen after this. That is what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. That affects me personally because the steak that I had from Logan Steakhouse a couple of months ago was delicious. And so now I'm pissed because I'm never going to be able to get another one because they're forced to close. It's just, it's insane. It's insane. It doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't. Like, why would someone think this is a good idea? Why would some PR person say, hey, listen, we are going to show that we only care about profits over truck drivers? It doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. People are idiots. Here's another rant of the day. So you guys remember that truck stop slang, right? The guy that got out and killed four pilot employees or three pilot employees and stabbed another customer, all women. Everyone's picked it up. Everyone's picked up the story, but nobody has said anything further beyond it. You know, is it a terrorist attack? In my book, yeah, I don't give a shit if it's domestic terror or what. The guy chose to attack women and killed them. But the media doesn't really cover it because we're focusing all. I mean, hell, I'm walking back. I'm skipping that story. Whatever. I'm not doing it. Speaking about steak, more than 80 confirmed COVID-19 cases at one food processing plant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. If you guys ever heard of Smithfield Foods, they make some bacon. They also own the brand Nathan's Hot Dogs and all sorts of other food brands. They're actually the biggest hog and pig, well, whatever, the biggest producer in the world. They have a massive company, 55,000 employees worldwide. Anyway, more than 80 employees at the Sioux Falls processing plant have tested positive for the coronavirus, according to multiple reports. The first confirmed case at Smithfield Foods meat processing plant came to light last week. Since then, over 80 workers have tested positive for the virus. Now, this isn't just isolated to Smithfield. Tyson Foods has 20 plus employees that have all tested positive, and this is as of last week, so it's not even current. So it just shows you that this thing is spreading. We talk about Amazon all the time. Amazon is super, you know, they're hiring 100,000 people. It's going to be great. They're hiring 100,000 people to replace all the people that are getting sick because of the coronavirus. I don't know. That's alleged. That's hypothetically, whatever. But they're hiring a lot of people, and a lot of their employees are getting sick. There was one distribution center that had over 50 cases. Over 50 cases. You have Walmart workers but they're considered essential. So they have to keep working. It's crazy. Yes, Devin Thomas said Smithfield was bought by a Chinese company. Yes, they were purchased by WH Group of China. According to their website, the company has over 55,000 employees worldwide with revenues exceeding $15 billion. They have over 30 meat processing plants in the United States. They are a big player in meat. They probably make all that steak and stuff that I like to eat a lot. South Dakota Secretary of Health, Kim, however you say her last name, spoke to the Department of Health spoke how the Department of Health is working with Smithfield Foods. I don't even, whatever. It's just crazy. And there's more. You know how many cases it talks about food products or freight people or all these different companies that have had employees test positive? It's literally everywhere. So covering this, it's food. I needed a story to write last night. So I was like, oh, I'll write this one real quick. But this is crazy. And it doesn't seem to go away. If we have, 16,000 deaths as of whenever that updated on my video here. It's insane. It's insane. All right, so let's go on another rant today. So here's another article I did, and then you guys can call in and we'll talk about whatever you want. Second lawsuit was filed naming mega brokerage in February carrier data breach. Can anyone guess who that mega brokerage is? my favorite three-letter brokerage. I'm annoyed. If you can't tell, I'm super annoyed right now. I'm trying to be mellow, but I'm really annoyed. I wish that I had more power and more play, or even better yet, I was on a radio show this morning doing a guest interview, and I wish I saw that NATSO article this morning so I could have broadcast it on a worldwide network. I really wish I did, because I'm super annoyed by it. You know, and everyone put out an article about it afterwards. So every single landline, freight waves, everybody put out an article about it because it's literally the stupidest thing you've ever heard in your life. Okay. So, yes, everyone said in the comments, TQL is getting sued again. This time it's a class action lawsuit brought upon by two carriers, one of which is a one truck operator out of Georgia. That guy said he's noticed fraudulent transactions in his bank account. They're suing on the grounds of now they have to spend so much time monitoring their accounts that they cannot participate in relief efforts, which is kind of out there, but whatever. The lawsuit is because there was another lawsuit. So the day after I broke the story, and I was the first one to break the story, I don't care who says otherwise, I broke the story about the data breach on Wednesday before they even notified their employees. On Thursday, or on the 27th is when I broke the story. I don't remember what day it was. I think it was a Wednesday. On Thursday, a carrier from Wisconsin went in and filed a lawsuit saying that his data was breached and all this stuff. He had no idea. It's just some guy out there trying to make money, in my opinion, allegedly, whatever the disclaimer would be. I didn't see, and I didn't really cover it, didn't really write an article about it. I know FreightWaves wrote an article about it. That's good. But I didn't really cover it because I didn't necessarily think it was the most, I didn't think it was a good lawsuit. I kind of thought it was frivolous. This lawsuit, on the other hand, it's written quite well. When I read the actual complaint, it's written quite well. They say a lot of stuff. It's got a lot of facts. It's pretty interesting. They also do cite my breaking news article in this lawsuit as well, just like the first one did. Literally a whole paragraph in my article, which is kind of neat because that means people are actually listening. Anyway, so just weeks after the one truck operator from Wisconsin filed a federal lawsuit against mega broker TQL Logistics seeking damages after being subject to a massive data breach, a separate class action lawsuit has been filed naming the brokerage again. So if anyone doesn't know what the data breach was, apparently hackers were able to access TQL system. Some people said it was just like a brute force thing. Other people said they got in through the Trax app on the cell phone. TQL doesn't say anything, so we don't know what actually happened. One way they got in, TQL had to say that they got in because whoever was in there started breaking changing all the banking account information for certain carriers. They say less than 20 carriers were affected, less than $100,000 of funds that should have been paid to carriers were diverted to other outside entities. But whatever, it happened. So they had a data breach. I covered the data breach exclusively in the beginning. I had, you know, sources that fed me the information. It was very true. It was honest. It was good information. I wrote the article. I also agreed with the way TQL handled it. I wrote the article on that, said they handled the data breach in the best way you can. Because unfortunately, as we move more towards freight tech and automating the systems and load boards and all that stuff, because we know Truckstop had a data breach, I'm sure several other brokers have had data breaches. I do know that the same software company that came and helped TQL recover has handled other logistics companies that had data breaches in the past couple of years that never went public. So there's a lot of, it's just something that's going to happen. It's going to happen in the industry. Why is it going to happen? Because everyone's moving to tech. So we're evolving and we're using stuff and there's going to be vulnerabilities. It's going to happen. The way they handled it, I thought was very good. So that's the history on the data breach. This lawsuit that was filed on March 23rd, these two carriers allege that increased risk of fraud and identity theft as a result of this breach is alone a significant injury to the carriers, as it places each of these small businesses and sole proprietors in the position of having to divert company resources away from transporting freight during an urgent time of nationwide supply chain crisis. That is literally a quote from the complaint, which is, it's kind of a unique spin on it, Because now these carriers are having to focus on trying to make sure their banks aren't being compromised or their tax information isn't being compromised because of the data breach that happened. So the first of the two plaintiffs is a one truck operation out of Georgia, Finesse Express LLC. He's got one truck, according to the FMCSA. The company looks to have started operations in 2019. According to the complaint, in the weeks following the February 27th email from TQL, because all carriers know and customers, you all got an email notifying you of the data breach. After the data breach and the email that TQL sent out, Finesse spent approximately 15 hours responding to the data breach, including reviewing every single transaction that comes through the company bank accounts. This is all in the complaint. The complaint alleges Finesse has identified three fraudulent transactions occurring since late February and had to spend time away from driving and acquiring loads contesting these fraudulent charges with this bank. The complaint alleges Finesse, who had missed out on business opportunities, and this is weird because they specifically mention this in the complaint. The complaint alleges Finesse had also missed out on business opportunities, including an 890-mile load that was paying $2,500 that Finesse would have been able to acquire, but he had to spend time working on the effects of the data breach. It's kind of interesting. The second trucking company, however, is not a one-truck operation. It is a much larger operation with 150 trucks. According to the complaint, according to Safer, they have 123 trucks and like 120 drivers, something like that. But their name is Wider Group, W-I-D-E-R Group. They are based in Indianapolis, Indiana, according to Safer. It's kind of weird, though, because you look on their website and no, they're based in Chicago. According to the complaint, plaintiff Wider spent time responding to the data breach, including time on the phone with a financial institution and time monitoring company bank accounts. The complaint alleges TQL could and should be held responsible for the damages that had caused plaintiffs and other carriers through the data breach, as TQL should have taken additional measures to keep the carrier's business and financial information confidential. That's a class action lawsuit. So I don't think that's going away. And by how I read that argument or how I read the complaint, I think they have some lawyers that actually know what they're doing. So it's interesting. Denara Waffen said on Facebook, I think this carrier's just pissed on TQL for some BS coming out of TQL, which happens a lot, and just use the opportunity to pay them back. I'm not saying there's validity in the complaint because I don't know the guy Finesse. I don't know the Wilder Group. I don't know, or Wider Group, or whatever the hell their name is. I don't know if there's actually any lasting effects to it. I know that the 20 plus people who had payments diverted, so payments that they were owed and had their bank account information changed to a fake bank account, which then received the payment from TQL to them for a load they delivered, those people have a valid claim. Because they didn't get paid when they're supposed to. That's how they discovered that there was a data breach. Because one of the accounting people was sitting there and was like, this carrier changed their information. Let me call them and verify. She called the carrier and she's like, did you change your banking information? And they're like, no, we didn't. And then they found out there was a big breach in the system and called in all sorts of people and sent the private jet to go pick them up. I got all the details about that. While it's early, we will closely follow the case and we'll update with new information as it becomes available. Who knows what's going to actually happen with it, though? It's a lawsuit. It's a frivolous thing that people file all the time. I'm not saying that this lawsuit is frivolous, but we'll see. It's got enough people because that letter was sent out to everybody. I published articles on it. TQL is in the news again today for the same exact thing, almost verbatim, that I covered a week ago. And not just my article, you know, because another media outlet today decided to write about TQL's massive layoffs, which is kind of ironic. And I'm going to vent a little bit about it and then I'm going to just stop. But it's kind of ironic because they were kind of criticizing me in prior programs, saying that the information that I had in my article was untrue or not credible. And yet today they published an article that was very, very similar, according to several people on LinkedIn who shared it with me before I even saw it. They're like, hey, did you change your name? Because this looks awfully like the article you wrote a couple of weeks ago. Whatever. The case is that big brokers, you know, some of them are just not good. Whatever. I don't know. This whole industry, I think really everyone just needs to turn off social media for a week. Everyone just needs to be quiet and shut it up. You know, because you go on Facebook now and you cannot get through your feed like 10 comments. I guarantee you, you guys can all try. Scroll down, maybe like, you know, 20 different posts and that you see, and one of them is a broker bashing post about how carriers are going to get back to brokers because brokers are all evil and we're all stealing all the money and we're all doing this and we're all making 90%. Again, I gave a little address in the beginning. I've spent pretty much the majority of the week talking about that kind of stuff because it's kind of BS. You know, but that just shows a lack of education in terms of understanding the brokerage industry through and through and understanding the supply chain issue through and through. But the call-in lines are active, 914-803-4008, or you're welcome to add comments in the chat and we'll go from there. This is, I don't know, I'm ready for it to be Friday and it's not, it's Thursday. The one good thing that's coming today is I have all my new audio equipment. I've got my mixer, I've got new microphones and all that stuff. So I'm pretty excited. But, all right, well, we got a bunch of comments. I'm not going to read through them all because they're most likely, they're most likely all about all the crap that I talked about. The only thing I could say is, NATSO, if you're anyone's watching this or has a direct connection to it, you guys should be ashamed of yourself, in my opinion. You know, that's my personal opinion. So, and I'm allowed to say my personal opinion on my show. They should be ashamed of themselves for trying to essentially say profits are more important than the driver's safety. Drivers are facing, this is a thing, and this is what I tried to say on this morning show that I was on this morning. I forgot what it's called, but someone else wrote it. Fault Lines. I was on a show in DC called Fault Lines. And that's what I was saying this morning, is a lot of people don't understand what trucking is. You know, trucking isn't just, you know, a guy driving down the truck listening to, you know, it's the whole thing. It's every single thing in my office. It's the monitor, it's the camera, it's the computer, it's the lights, it's the microphones, it's the desk, the walls, the building material to build this damn house. Every single thing that I have in my house or that is this house came on a truck at some point. A lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people. And it's just, it's sad. And that's why I went on the radio show. Because the radio show is a little weird. You know, I'll say it. It's owned by the Russians from what I found out after. But that's okay. You know, but I wanted to shed light on the plight of trucking. And I could do it all day, every day through social media. But the only people that are going to watch it are people that care about the industry and care about hearing what I have to say. I went on a terrestrial radio show this morning that's broadcast in D.C., Kansas City, and then worldwide. Probably a lot in Russia because it's owned by the Russians, apparently. But I went on there so I could talk about trucking and talk about supply chain issues. And I said the truth. I am petrified of what the next month is going to look like freight wise. Me personally, financially, I'm good. I'm more concerned about what the industry is going to do and what we're going to what it's going to look like in a year. How long is it going to take for us to recover as a country? Not just logistics, not just trucking. How long is it going to take for us to rebound from this? Years and years and years and years is my goal or my expectation. Is it going to be a glamorous? I mean, hell, it's not right now. But with the amount that I love the industry, my goal someday would be to talk to my kids and either, you know, have them jump in a truck and experience that side of it, which I did, or, yeah, well, do that first and then join the broker side of things. Because no matter what any of you guys, the carriers, the uneducated carriers out there that keep saying that brokers are the root of all your negativity or whatever, brokering is a good job and it's kind of fulfilling when you get to a certain point when you get to the point where I am, where I can actually feel like I'm doing the right thing. I don't make a shit ton of profit on every single load. I'm different than the way other people do things. I just don't do things that way. I don't need to go out and make $700 profit on a $700 load. Why? Because I'd rather pay the carrier a little bit more and have the customer have some savings so I can get freight again. That's the way I do things. And a lot of people are like, why don't you just give the extra money to the carrier? Well, we already addressed that, so I'm not going to talk about it. But my goal is to make sure the customer keeps giving me freight to ship. And it doesn't go over to one of those mega brokers that, you know, forces their employees to make a 25% profit margin, or they leave, or they're fired. Or they're fired and have their health insurance canceled and bound by non-competes for a year, like some three-letter broker did. The industry is kind of sad. It's a little bit sad the way it is right now. You know, it is. And you see more and more people every day. Some of the Black Smoke Matter guys were online the other day making videos about maybe it's just time to stop the trucks. And I don't necessarily disagree. I'm not talking about parking and stopping on the highway and trying to block traffic and throw up your middle fingers because that's super cool. I'm talking about doing it to be safe. Park your truck at your house. Rates aren't great. Rates aren't great at all right now. There's people that are pulling essential freight and that are doing okay, but they're not what they should be. Even those guys, you know, there's people that are bragging about, you know, making $1.60, $1.70 a mile, saying, well, I'm good. I get it. That's your cost to operate. But when you take low loads and low rated loads, it affects the industry completely. But Richard Riviera said, I know the last couple of shows you've been asking about the guys with RFPs. Here are some of the many different variables when it comes to the RFPs, so forth. When our country starts coming out of this whole coronavirus ordeal, we all know that we will have a lot more freight volume than needs to be moved. For the folks with RFPs in place, they will have some decisions to make. What kind of customers have as far as profitability, relationships, and so forth. Also, so much volume they are awarding. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I looked into it a little bit last night because you see ocean freight forwarders are doing the force majeure or majeure, however the hell you say that, where they're basically saying, hey, this is an act of God. Our pricing we're not sticking to our pricing. I'm assuming that if LTL carriers haven't done it, they're going to do it soon because LTL shipping is also down. So it's going to be crazy. That, I mean, the whole industry is, it's crazy, man. Jeffrey Child said, any information on accidents while smaller car traffic has been less with lockdown? No, it's too soon. We won't learn about the accidents till next year, till 2021, when all the safety reports come out. That's when we'll start learning about all that stuff. David Quackelbaum on Facebook said he parked last year. Too many trucks oversaturated the industry. Rates went to hell. Yeah, I mean, that's what's happening right now. A lot of people think it's not. They're like, oh, brokers are stealing all the money. No, that's not what happens. We have an overcapacity of trucks because 60% of businesses in the United States shut down. That's what I was saying on the show this morning, too. 60% of businesses in the United States are shut down. Think about it. What do you think happens when 60% of businesses shut down? The product that they ship is no longer shipping. All the restaurants that are closed down, all the food deliveries that are going there are no longer going. All that produce is being thrown away, all the milk being drained. It's happening everywhere. It happened in Florida, happened in Vermont, happened in Wisconsin. And it made the local news everywhere because all these people are spilling out all the gallons. In Florida, it didn't make local news because they were throwing away gallons. It made local news because they're like, where's all that milk going to go? It's going to go into our waterways. Oh. The world is essentially ending right now. Not really, but that's a dramatic. It's crazy. It's crazy. The whole industry right now is freaking, it's nuts because I don't know what to expect. I mean, what do we expect? What is going to happen? Does anyone know? You know, I watch Freight Waves every day because those guys are so much smarter than me. You know, as much as I harp on them, they have like, you know, economists and market experts. Well, market expert is here or there, but they have, you know, economists and very smart people that, and I'm waiting for them to like look at all the numbers and all the math and put out a little graphic and say, okay, this is exactly when freight's going to come back. But unfortunately, they haven't done it either. Nobody has. Nobody knows when this is going to come back. Everyone's saying Q4. This extension of the hours of service rule yesterday scared the crap out of me, to be completely honest. Scared the crap out of me because I was like, what the hell? That means that the government at least thinks that this thing is going to last for another 35 days at minimum. What the hell are we going to do for 30? That's what I was thinking. What the hell am I going to do for 35 days? I'm going stir crazy in my house. I only have like 300 pounds and a curling bar to work out with. I've had to do ab work because I'm so freaking bored. Like, and that's not even having to do with work. My work stays the same. I work from my house every day. I'm not out driving a truck. But what do I, like, this is boring as hell, you know? It's just crazy. I sincerely hope it doesn't last until May 15th. I really hope it doesn't. Because it's going to, I mean, how many of you guys out there right now will be able to continue on past March or May 15th? If rates stay how low they are. I mean, all these guys that are on social media saying all the time, brokers are evil, and when this is over, we're going to get them back and all that stuff. Do you think those guys are the ones that are going to be able to succeed and stay open? I can tell you they're probably not if they're out running and taking all that cheap freight and then complaining about it later, but they're still the ones that are taking it. No, they're probably not, because they're going to be running and putting wear and tear on their vehicle and not have the profit to fix it should something happen. It's just crazy. It's crazy. Really is. Jeffrey Child said, manufacturing engineer here, boss. Pretty sure I'm more educated than the average person. I'm retired. Oh, you guys are talking back and forth. Oh, Laz, stirring it up. Any numbers on accidents won't mean much of anything. The numbers will be down on the number of accidents, but that's only true due to less congestion, not to one or the other. Yeah, but they will have analytics for the accident data from next year. So we can look at how many safety violations happened during this time versus how many happened after. Logbook violations, things like that, you know, physical safety violations on the units themselves. You'll be able to analyze that, how many accidents have been attributed to logs and things like that. That's what I want to look at, and that's what I'm going to look at. That's why I started the North American Association of Transportation Service Providers, because I want to use that data and then partner with companies that actually give a crap about the industry, not little stupid truck stop trade organizations that show they don't give a shit, but partner with companies that actually do care and want to make a change, and then say, hey, listen, here's all this data that shows that the hours of service are completely flawed. You pull the hours of service when we're in a national emergency, and then yet you restrict all the drivers to horrible hours. It's silly. But instead, you have trade organizations that are trying to get it so it's a nationwide concealed carry. Or they're trying to sue the FMCSA in a national crisis because they didn't rule dispatchers are illegal. Or they're trying to say, hey, our truck stops need to food more than the independent road coach operators across the United States. That's what our associations do now. It's insane. TIA today is having a webinar. They're having, and I guess Jim Mullen is going to be on there and he's going to talk about it. So I'm interested. I may try to find that webinar and see that one. I think it's today. It could be tomorrow. I don't know. I saw something emailed. Actually, it's probably today. It's probably right now. That's what always happens when I want to watch something. Let me see, because I think that would be a good one for you guys all to watch too. Because I know a lot of people don't like TIA, but I like them. So I mean, but they're for brokers. They're not on the carrier side. They don't focus on little carriers. And that's the reason why I think a trade organization where it works with both people are very important. Hold on. So let me check one thing. I don't even know where the email is. I can't find it. TIA one. TIA April 8th. Is that today? No, today's the 9th. So this is yesterday. I don't know. I'll find it in a second once this loads. TIA update. You know, so the webinar is today, but it doesn't say what time it is. FMCSA's response to COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know when that's going to be. Oh, that was already today. That was Thursday at 12 to 1, so now I got to find that. But that was an event with the TIA sponsored by truckstop.com. Look at that one, Craig. Yeah, the whole thing, the whole industry is just, it's unnerving right now. It makes me, I'm a little unnerved, but whatever. Anyway, Jeffrey Child said, I just asked a question, Super Trucker. You guys are going back and forth hard, huh? You're both good. You both listen. You both watch. Good. 2 to 3 p.m. It was today. Nate said, if it continues for 6 months, there won't be a single rate cutter left. I agree. That's the only thing. You could call this a great trucking purge. Maybe I should call it that because I had the Amazon purge and now we got slaying and this. And is that catchy if I say the great trucking purge? You know, because they have the Great Depression and stuff where clearly we're going to be in a massive depression for years to come. But should I call what this little segment with cheap freight is the trucking purge? Because that's essentially what it's going to be if all these trucks are out pulling freight for super cheap. And we as brokers still have an overabundance of capacity. Clearly, rates are going to stay low and they'll continue to go lower and lower and lower. I said on the show this morning that we were at the bottom of that freight cliff. We're not. We're on our way down. We're like halfway down that waterfall of hell. So what happens when we get to the bottom? I don't know. But maybe like I, you know, maybe I know the Freight Waves people all watch this show always. So if they want to, you know, give a forecast, because I think maybe they have and I just missed it. But it would be interesting to see what your economists think. When they think this is going to be over, can you look at data and figure that out? I have no idea. I'm not an economist. But it would be interesting to have an educated guess on when they think that the market, not when it will rebound, because we're going to be years away from that happening, but when they think it'll start, when that turn is. Everyone talks about the cliff and it coming down, but I haven't heard a single damn thing that says when this thing is going to end. You know, like I said, I'm going to be fine. Nothing's going to happen to me in terms of financially. My wife is a teacher. She's still teaching her kids, although they're not doing anything. I do what I do to make money and survive. But this is a big deal. Rowdy Duff said, I've been doing this for 25 years. This too will pass. Yeah, no, it will. But who knows when? I mean, I'm still going to work in the industry. I don't quit. I love this industry. But I want us to work together. I want carriers to work together, carriers and drivers and everybody, and as an industry, literally work together. I would like to say to truck stops, hey, do not charge for parking if your drivers are forced to go and pay 20 cents more per gallon than what the little mom and pop shop that doesn't have parking has. Like, if you're going to make me go and buy some burger that's been sitting out for 4 hours at your truck stop and that's sitting under a heat lamp that tastes like, doesn't taste good. Whatever, dude. It's sad. It's a sad, sad time in the industry right now. And the more I think about it, the more I get frustrated, which is annoying. You know what? Here's one good thing. One Truck Stop Loves. The Loves Truck Stop donated $100,000 to the Christopher Fund. I've got an article that's going to automatically schedule the send out in 12 minutes. That's a good story. You know what else is a good story? Hearing drivers that are happy to be doing what they're doing. You know, hearing drivers that are fulfilling, hearing people pay homage to truck drivers that deserve it. Do I deserve any? Because here's the kicker. That with the whole like Senator Schumer $25,000 hero fund that everybody's talking about that's never actually going to materialize at all. You guys could probably mark my words on that. That would apply to anybody that's considered an essential worker, which is just outrageous. From what I read, it would be first responders, trucks, you know, grocery workers, everybody that works through this, which we're all going to have to pay back in the long run anyway. But as it applies to truckers, there's nothing to help a sole independent operator. You're not going to be eligible for that, from what I understand. And it's not like you're getting $25,000. You're getting paid based on the hour. So it works out to be a $13 hazard pay based on the hours that you're actually working, hauling critical. And there's all sorts of data that's going to have to be collected. And it's never going to happen, in my opinion. But it's just crazy. The whole thing right now, I'm over it. I'm ready for it to be over, to be completely honest. Call-in line's active, guys. 914-803-4008. I got a ton of you watching. So why doesn't someone come in? Call. Laz, why don't you call in? Talk a little bit about what you are seeing on the broker side of things. Jeffrey Child said, a lot of people don't understand the American people and how they will come together and ramp up again. This is going to be like a war-type economy after this. I think we'll see a huge uptick in production and the American pride. Absolutely. I believe that too. You know, I'm not like, listen, it's a downtime right now. Okay. Freight, my industry, the industry I love and work in every single day, it's not really looking that great in the short term. Are we going to be able to rebound? Yeah. Are we going to have super truckers out there that are going to be complaining about how much money they're making in a couple of years? Yeah. But right now it just kind of sucks. Numbers on your screen, 914-803-4008. I'll also make it scroll down there too. Look at that high tech stuff. You can talk about whatever you want. Bill Wiseman said, this will hurt brokers as well. Carriers die off and the truck has a truck to load ratio becomes lopsided. Brokers will have to pay much more than the customers will really be upset at the high rates and invite much more brokers to better offerings and all less margins and more competition. Well, it's kind of funny because you said two different things there. You said brokers will have to pay much more. Well, technically, the broker doesn't have to pay much more. The shipper does because the broker gets a profit. So they take a piece of the pie. That's how they make their money. A lot of people think that brokers are like, hey, listen, you got to load from this point to this point. All right, it's going to be $5,000 and I'm going to go pay a carrier $2,000. That's not the way the industry works. The more often than not, 90% of the freight or 80% of the freight is contract and it's done by super brokers or super shippers, really, is what they have. You know, the big logistics departments internally where they work with brokers and they figure it all out. It's just silly. It's silly. John Stater on YouTube said, it's a lot of work, man. Driving is no joke hard. I know. I love driving. I know. Mr. Lampshade said, most owner-operators are grossing $60,000 or more, but claim not to be making any money. I guess more employees at brokerage don't make much more than $50,000 per year. Yeah, they do. Well, some sales guys do. You know, good salespeople, like I always have. Hell, I wouldn't even take a job for, you know, double that now. But, you know, when I first started, my first, like, actual, like, job in logistics that I was paid for that I didn't own. Because, like I said, I started this whole thing myself. My whole career in logistics is self-taught. But my first paid position, I made well over 50 with a base salary plus commission. But that's because I'm awesome. You know, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Everyone complains about everything. That's the thing about us in America is we're just a bunch of wine asses. We complain literally about everything. You know, I say it to my wife every day. I'm like, you'd complain if it's, you know, if there's a tiny sky or a tiny cloud in the sky. You know, that's what people do. I feel like we have this sense of entitlement. So we just complain about shit all the time. I do as well. I complain about the stupid ass microphone. I hate the stand. So what did I do? I went out and bought a $1,000 system that's coming today, you know, but I complain about everything. This microphone works. You guys can hear me, but like me, I've got three cars. What do I need three cars for? There's two adults in my house, but I have three cars and a Harley, but I still complain about my brand new car and say, I shouldn't have bought it. I should have bought something else. Blah, blah, blah. I don't like it. That's what we do. My kids complain too. They're complaining they have to do schoolwork at home. You know, I complained to my kid's teacher yesterday because get this. And then if someone wants to call back, there was a call for a second, but it hung up. But if someone wants to, you want to hear something funny. We're talking about house, you know, because everyone knows pretty much the entire country right now is working remote. So I'm here. My wife is on the other side of this wall in another room. She's got her little desk set up and she's teaching high school English, believe it or not. My son is in this room doing all his schoolwork. But this little guy, we find out yesterday, he's failing gym. And gym, because of remote. And I'm like, what the hell? You can't fail gym. I don't have him on the wall, but I'm a world-class athlete. You know, I'm a competitive powerlifter. I competed last year in the Worlds in Ireland. I'm like, there's no way my son fails gym. So I flipped out on him. Understandably, that's what you do. You flip out. There's a caller on hold. I'll pick you up in a minute. So just bear with it, please. I tried to open the video. And the video that he was supposed to watch to answer questions for the PE class would not open. Didn't allow it to be opened. So I sent the email. Because again, I was pissed off because of the whole thing. I sent an email to his teacher. And I'm like, hey, this is Riley's father. Just so you know, I'm a competing powerlifter. I competed in Worlds last year. It's kind of funny. It doesn't sound that funny. Makes me sound like a snob. But it was funny because I said I'm a world-class athlete and there's no way in hell my son will ever, ever in capital letter fails PE. And then I said, no, but seriously, we can't open the video. What are we supposed to do? You know, but it just shows you because my son knew about that video not being able to open for a week. He didn't tell me. Because as soon as he's done with his schoolwork, I'm like, sure, go play Fortnite. and so he wasn't telling me because he figured he could just play Fortnite instead of having to watch the, you know, his gym teacher go, oh, look at this big rubbery ball. My son deadlifts more than the guy weighs. Anyway, I have a caller. Let me pick him up. What's up? You're on the air.
Hey, it's Rowdy Duff.
What's up, Rowdy?
Enjoy your show.
Thank you, bud.
You know, there's a lot of guys out there that are, you know, obviously struggling. They should take advantage of calling every debtor they have that's holding a note on anything they own. Get payments pushed back, defer payments. Insurance companies are working with them now. You know, do everything you can. Get in line for SBA loans. Interest rates are going to be pretty low for those. Do everything you can to survive over the next 6 months.
It's going to be rough. I mean... Yeah, well, we've been writing about all that too.
You're going to make it into the winter rush.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. Yeah.
No, it's fine. There's a little delay, so it's hard to do it. Go ahead.
Sorry, but yeah, that's I've got about 20 guys that are owner operators that run for me that have their own authorities. They own their own trucks, and I've told every one of them do the same thing: just get in line for whatever they can get. Call everybody they work with, defer payments, you know, don't just keep running dumb, you know, get built up and try to take advantage of the opportunity to run with no payments.
Yeah, that's the only way to get it. So you're actually going to be able to make money because if the rates are down drastically, that you need to lower your operating costs. And if there's a way, I mean, I even did it. I don't need to, but I took every single one of my cars. I got a forbearance on the payments for 3 months, every single one of them. And do I need to do it? No, yeah. But who knows what the next month or two are going to look like. So you never know. And that's why, just like you said, if I didn't apply for the SBA loans or any of that stuff, cause there's no point. I don't need it. I'll let someone else that actually needs it have it. But it's just, you got to do everybody has to do everything they possibly can right now to make sure you're able to sustain when this thing is over. And unfortunately, nobody knows when it's going to be over. So we're kind of all just sitting, waiting around, waiting. You know, I'm reading every single news article that I could find that says anything about COVID, trying to understand if there's ever a projection of when this thing is going to end. You know, and I don't know. It's a weird time. Something I've never thought I would experience in my life.
I think the weirdest part of this is the worry that the second wave could come around next fall and winter.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the biggest fear that a lot of companies are looking at is, you know, do you control what you got and then survive till, you know, September, November, December, and then get hit again with this? And how would the government respond to that? You know, I mean, how much money can you possibly throw at this thing before everybody's insolvent?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take a while, man. It's hopefully we figure it out eventually, but thank you for calling in, bud.
All right. Enjoy the show. Take care, bud.
See ya. Yeah. It's interesting. TC Boggs, you just wrote something. So let me address that. You said, it's because you have nothing at stake. Everything is literally a profit. No, a huge portion of the broker's revenue is profit, but we have some overhead, nothing even close to what you compare to, but also we're not making the same type of profit as well. You know, that's, and again, a lot, when rates are low, nobody's making a profit, but let's get this right, straight. When rates are good, people are making money. That's why we have an overabundance of capacity. If you guys didn't know that, because in 2018, rates were doing very well. People weren't running for cost. They were running for double their cost to operate. That is the thing about the industry and the economy. If demand is super high, then you guys get to dictate rates. Right now, demand is super low and capacity is super high. So brokers, are most likely, because the rates are lower, making less money than they were, say, a month ago, because we take a percentage of the profit. I know a lot of carriers that don't have any understanding on how the business works think that brokers are taking a massive 50% profit or whatever you guys think all the time, or at minimum 20. That's what one guy said today. That just shows that people don't understand. You know when the last time I made a 20% profit was? It was probably years ago. It doesn't happen all the time. A lot of people think that's the way the industry works. And the only way for anyone to change that or to, I mean, that's one of the reasons I make the videos, to try to sway that opinion, because it's crap. But we have a couple of callers on hold, so let me pick up this first one. What's up? You're on the air. Hey, you're on the air. Yep, that's you. Hello. All right, call back. There you go. Call back.
You want me to cut?
Nope, that's you. Nope. That was the other guy. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, this delay sucks balls.
What's that? Yeah, it does. It's pretty rough.
But yeah, a lot of. I've pretty much given up trying to explain to carriers how little brokers actually make, and we do have quite a bit of overhead. You know, we carry very similar insurance that they're not aware that we carry. Yes, our overall, yeah, we don't have the expense of the truck, the massive expense of the insurance for the cargo. And on that, one thing I can say for carriers, and one thing I did for myself, if they've got to shut down, if they're looking at getting off the road for a month or two, you can most likely only carry the bobtail insurance and cancel the cargo, the really expensive insurance, and sit at home, pay a whole lot less for the insurance, and maintain their number of months and years for their authority, so that they're not in the crapper when they come back out into the industry, back out into the market. That's what I did with mine until I could want to see what was going to happen with the rates. Unfortunately, they did not quite come around. I said, you know what? I'm just going to let it go inactive for a while.
Yeah. But, well, with the insurance thing, it doesn't work that way if you're an owner operator, because you would have to keep liability insurance on, and that is the hefty requirement. You could drop your liability to $750,000. Cargo, you could just remove, because cargo is not required to maintain a bond. It's required to book loads. It's not required to maintain a bond. But as soon as you drop below that $750,000 with the FMCSA, they're going to pull your authority. So, I don't know.
Mine, all I had was the bobtail, just the absolute bare minimum, whatever they're absolutely required. But they're going to be paying a whole lot less, and that could help them stretch it out. So hopefully they can wait this out until things kind of come back around. Get a lot of carriers that get purged out that jumped in 2018, just because everybody was going out bragging about how much they were making. So every time Dick and Harry went out and bought a damn truck, and now all of a sudden they did it to themselves. Now they have what? I'm not going to say how many more, but another 50% trucks. And it just turned right around whenever everything settled down. And I have way too many trucks.
Right.
But luckily, my customer still pays good rates. I'm paying over $2 a mile on 2,000 miles plus.
Right.
I just booked two loads, one yesterday, one today. It's going up to Washington, paying good money. My customer understands that they're going to have to pay to get their loads to where they need to go.
Right.
The crap shippers, the ones that are super cheap, if they're going to be that way, you need to go look elsewhere, try to find somebody different. Don't keep on trying to get these shippers who are already cheap to come up on the rates, because they're always going to be cheap regardless.
Right. Well, that's one of the issues with the whole brokers are evil mindset is, they're not, in my opinion, they can't really talk about how bad brokers are because they don't have direct clients. They rely on brokers because clearly they're doing something wrong in their own business. If you have a problem, and this it goes out to all the carriers. Hey, thank you for calling, bud.
All right, man.
All right. Yeah, I'll pick up the 904 number here in a minute, so just hang on. But yeah, that's the truth. Brokers, yeah, you could say brokers are evil all the time. And then the simple response is, if brokers are evil and brokers are taking too much of a profit, then go out and get your own direct shippers. go out and do it, because it's super easy to say, oh, brokers are evil and all woe is me. Oh, it's so miserable, which it is. The trucking industry isn't. I sold trucks and I got out of my trucks because it wasn't that great. You know, it's a lot easier for me to make money as a broker than it was for me to make money as a trucking company owner. That's just my personal opinion. But I also, as a fleet owner, I had my own direct customers. I didn't rely on the brokers to get freight all the time. I had direct customers, and you have to go do that. Otherwise, yeah, you're just going to be playing the market. And you really have no right to complain about low rates or high rates, because you're not going out and getting your own customers and trying to dictate your future. You're just letting other people do it and then complaining about it, which is kind of mind-blowing. But it is what it is. People do that all the time. Hey, what's up? You're on the air. Hey, you're on the air, bud. You got to mute that sound and talk if you want to call in. Oh, God. This guy wants to call. He's called twice.
This is Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. What's up, buddy?
I'm calling in because, I'm here. Everything's muted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well, listen. So I'm calling. I see you addressing the fact that brokers are not evil and whatnot, and I'm never saying that. But how come we don't address the fact that right now on your screen, it shows coronaviruses and deaths and recovered and all that. And obviously that's what's going on in the world right now. But how come there's no hazard pay for this? We keep getting compliments. We keep getting told that we're heroes, but we're not getting paid like it. And we shouldn't be told to go for direct shippers to get a good rate. But in reality, everyone's giving us a pat on the back. How come we don't get paid accordingly? Why is it left to supply and demand at the moment?
Wait, I don't get it. Well, because supply and demand is what dictates rate in every single industry. Yes, people, but if the cost of, because this is how freight works, okay? And I'm just going to hang up because there's a delay, but I'm going to answer your question.
I know how supply and demand.
There was a huge delay there. All right, so this is what happens when a customer, and because I was a shipper too, all right, and I was a logistics manager for a shipper, I saw the internal. What we would do when we would quote or when we would purchase a piece of equipment or when we'd manufacture one and send one out, we had a freight rate that was calculated into the total cost of the product. So meaning that, it say, hypothetically, say you're selling an air conditioning unit. You know that to ship that air conditioning unit, it's going to cost you $1,200. When you sell that to the customer, you are typically saying, okay, it's going to cost $1,500 to have it shipped. And then the customer pays you for it. And then you hire a broker, you hire a direct carrier, and then it goes that way. And then it goes out. The problem is freight, the product that's being shipped isn't necessarily being made, bought, and paid for when this whole crisis happens. So everybody agrees that truck drivers, well, maybe not everybody. I certainly agree that truck drivers deserve a hazard pay for driving right now. But the problem is that there's no money in the rates. And the fact that we have an economy that's crashing, meaning that people aren't buying shit because nothing's open. There's no extra money to pull out and pay more money. And plus, we have added capacity on the market, which is going to flood the market with cheap trucks. I agree that every truck driver that's out there right now pulling essential freight, I don't necessarily agree everybody that's out there and not pulling essential freight, the guys that are out there pulling stuff that doesn't qualify and they're just out there making money, I have no problem with that. But you know, the people that are doing the essential deed and that are hauling freight and doing essential work, those are the people that deserve a hazard pay. But the hazard pay can't be built into the rate like right now. Do you understand? Where's that money come from? It doesn't come from a profit margin because brokers aren't making 50 to 100% profit like all of you guys think. It doesn't work that way. Like John said, what's going on? John said, there really isn't. Most margins are paper thin. If you're talking about something preconceived, you have no idea about. Don't do that. Exactly. It's kind of what I'm thinking about. You can't just pull it out your butt. You know, you can't pull profit out your butt. It doesn't work. You know, it's just annoying. Bill Wiseman said both should be paid, essential or non-essential should be paid. Both are risking their life. No, non-essential goods don't need to ship right now. That's it. Non-essential goods don't need to ship. So, and if you're not hauling non-essential goods, you're putting yourself at risk. I'm not saying that you don't deserve anything, but I'm saying that I wouldn't go and fight for it. You know, like, for example, the product that I ship right now is not essential. So if a carrier wants to try to charge more or charge less or whatever, it doesn't matter to me because I could give two shits whether the freight ships or not. I'm just trying to make my customer happy by getting whatever I can out. But it's not essential. It's not saving anyone's life. People aren't eating, you know, moving stuff. It doesn't work. The carriers that are hauling that don't deserve more money because they're doing something they do all the time anyway. It's the people that are running essential goods, that are hauling all the essential stuff. Those are the guys that deserve the pay. But that's it. That's it with that. Bill said, well, they are. And if your customers are shipping it, then pay it up. Well, okay. Well, that, again, doesn't make sense. And we don't upcharge for us. We can't upcharge for hazard pay because, again, you have to understand how supply chain works. We can't go to the customer and say, hey, I know we charged or we quoted you $2,000, but now it's going to cost you $3,000 for every single shipment you ever do because we're in a time of crisis. No, I know it's not hazardous goods. I know it's like T-shirts that are going to sit in a warehouse for an hour, but the carrier wants hazard pay for it. It doesn't make sense. I agree that the guys that are doing hazard that are doing the essential freight, they deserve hazard pay 100%. You know, the drivers that are delivering into New York City, they deserve hazardous pay. But Bill said, so you admit you won't step up and ask for your company for an extra dollar all the time, risking your life? No, absolutely not. I will admit that. Yes. I will admit, I will not go up. If I'm shipping my goods right now, I will not go to my customer and say, I need more money because I need to pay hazard pay to a driver for doing his job. Yes, it's not exempt freight. It's not needed to be shipped. The customer is looking to do it. If I was shipping medical equipment that had to be shipped, yes, that's where you get a higher rate and you get hazard pay and all that crap. But that's it. You know, it's not, it's kind of a silly argument, to be honest. I'm over that one. Oh, God. Mr. Lampshade, not saying driving is easy, but neither is most construction labor jobs for those folks. Don't expect to make less than $100,000 per year. No, I know. It's silly. 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 This chat is like the best descriptive event for what is wrong with trucking right now. To be completely honest, like, I know you guys can't see it, but I have YouTube conversations, Facebook, Twitter, all those conversations on my screen all at once. And it's just everyone's saying the same thing. It's like, truckers are awesome. We need to get all sorts of more money and more support, and brokers are evil. And then you have brokers that are like, no, listen, I'm going to school you. I'm going to teach you on this. And then you have people that are like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And it just goes back and forth. A bunch of kids. Bill said, I'm scared to admit this because you will lose a customer. Bill, maybe this is the first time ever watching my show. I don't give a shit about losing a customer, to be honest. I don't even like being a broker that much anymore recently. It's just not fun. There's not anything fulfilling in doing it. But no, I'm not scared to admit anything. The problem is that I don't think non-essential carriers need to be paid like they're essential. If they went and made every single, you know, the operation of trucking right now, so everyone was hauling essential goods, then yes, I'd agree 100%. But the fact is that people that are out here to make a living don't deserve extra money to make that living. Just like the people that are working at Whole Foods don't deserve, and this is going to piss off all the Whole Foods, like, you know, granola eaters. Those people don't deserve double pay to do their job. Do they deserve a little bonus? Absolutely. But you can't pull money out of the air. It doesn't, if it's not there, it's not there. A lot of people don't understand that. People, TC Boggs said, you guys are going back and forth. It's kind of funny. He said, I've done sales, John, and health insurance back in early 2000s. John, it's pretty brainless as long as you can speak intelligible over the phone. You shippers have freight they need moved for you and facilitate the need. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Bill Wiseman said non-essential products are tying up the capacity to essential loads while they run on the risk of getting sick. They qualify for it. Do you understand that we don't have any issue right now with capacity, Bill Wiseman? Practice your name, bud, because we do not have a problem with capacity at all. So anyone that's running non-essential products, keep in mind that 60% of the nation's companies are closed right now. 60% of the nation's businesses are closed. So we don't have any issue with capacity. We have an issue with people like you that come out assuming that you need to be paid more for doing your job. It doesn't make any sense. As I've already said, if you're hauling essential goods, you get paid to haul essential goods. If you're not hauling essential goods, you don't get paid. No matter what the case is, Bill, here's the truth, and this is what bugs every single carrier out there the most, because they know I'm right. If you do not like the rates you are giving or you're being given, do not accept the loads. Stand up for yourself and say, I'm done. I'm not pulling this cheap crap until the freight comes up. Because like I say all the time, guess what I do as a broker when I can't move a load because I don't have a carrier for it? I pay more money. I know it's a novel concept that you have to negotiate with a broker, but brokers are not necessarily your customers. If you're unhappy with the treatment you're getting from a broker, then go out and get your own customers, or just leave trucking, because the negative attitude is not what I want in trucking. It's not what I value in trucking. It really upsets me, and it makes me... Come on, wise man, be a wise man. All right. Anyway, Bill, I'm muting you because you're annoying the shit out of me. See you later. God, man, so annoying. This dude's out of... I just got really mad. I apologize to all the viewers. I am sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize. Anyway. Wow. Hey, here's a commercial. I'm going to get water or beer or something. I'm simply...
What's a singing goat have to do with factoring? Nothing. OTR Capital. Better than the rest.
Wow. Super annoying right there. I don't care who you are. That was annoying. Not the commercial. The commercial's great. But the going back and forth about people is... Oh, my God. It is crazy. Anyway. So we had some comments. We went back and forth. TC Bog said, you post that stuff. It's, I mean, again, it's people that don't fully understand the industry. And I don't mean to be mean to Bill. You know, actually, I do, because it's it's that kind of attitude, the negative attitude in the industry, that seriously just ruins it. It just ruins it. All right, Wilson is asking what the class action is against TQL. Well, I already talked about it, so I guess I'll talk about it again. Or, Wilson, you could go to freightbrokerlive.com and find the article, and you would be able to see the article. But because I did write a whole article about it. But anyway, it's they had a data breach in February. Carriers are mad because their information was compromised, including financial and bank account information. So they're doing a class action lawsuit against TQL. If you want more information on it, go to my website, freightbrokerlive.com, and you'll be able to find it, because I talked about it for like 20 minutes already earlier in the show. Purr said, freedom of speech, don't mute him. I know, I did. I practiced my freedom of speech by muting him because he was annoying the crap out of me. Laz said, give it up, Bill. Steven, no need to apologize at all. If someone can't handle the truth and the facts, and they're the ones that have a problem, next, get that chip off their shoulder, because the monkey on their back is going to keep them. The thing is, I like to try to train people. I like to try to help people and help people understand the industry the best that I can. And unfortunately, it's very hard to do when you have closed-minded people. So when you have closed-minded like people that just don't understand the industry, it doesn't make any sense. You know, it like why are these people owner operators? Why are they their own trucking company owners when you don't understand how the broker side works? If you don't understand how the broker side works, you cannot be an effective owner operator and an effective trucking company owner, because in order for you to be the most strategic that you to have the strategic capabilities that you need to in terms of negotiation, you need to understand how the broker work and how profit is created and come up with, and how brokers quote. It's the same thing I always talk about. It's just annoying. Kevin James said, Steve, break it down for him. I haul OSOW equipment, non-essential, and I'm on the load now. And no, I didn't get the rate I wanted, but I got what would work, LA to Texas. So the way it works is if you can't do it, F and negotiate. And if they won't give it to you, keep looking. I drink more beer and barbecue and I work, and I still made $200,000 last year. I know. It doesn't make any sense. People those are the same people that are like, oh, well, you know, the broker's offering, you know, $1 a mile. Okay, well, clearly you didn't take it. No, I had to take it. There was no other loads there, so I took it. Well, you could have waited another hour, and then that broker would have paid $1.10, and then $1.20, and $3, and $4, and $5, and it just keeps going up. That's the way it works. It's just crazy. TC Boggs and John are going hard at each other right now. TC said, because you're driving that desk and laptop, and I'm out here in the flesh seeing it. And John's like, I know you lack the facts category big time, bro. Get education. I know John. I like John. I don't know TC. I don't really even know John. I just see him all over the place on social. You guys are both good. You're both good people, and you both understand. But the principle of it is that there's a huge disconnect between a lot of carriers and brokers, and it's not necessarily unfounded, because a lot of them have bad experiences with carrier or with brokers. You know, when you deal with the big brokers who are used to, I mean, I was still surprised. I never would imagine that someone would have a $4,000 a week profit minimum. That's what some of these big brokers have. Not $4,000 a week, like you move one load for $4,000 and your job is secure. No, $4,000 a week in profit, meaning that they have to. That's quite a bit of money when you think about it. It's just crazy. It's crazy. People are just crazy. Let me try to pick up this call.
Hello.
Yeah, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man, I was just listening to that guy, Bill, and I do want to know why hazard pay can't be implemented in the time of this. I know supply and demand is obviously a coherent argument towards why, you know, why rates are what they are. But, I mean, why can't we get hazard pay? And this is Joe. I spoke to you earlier. He actually hit the nail on the head. Why aren't we getting hazard pay coming in off of these shippers? They're making us fill out forms. They're scared for their life. Why can't I get paid accordingly?
Because the money's not.
Why can't we pitch the supply and demand factor for a little bit? Why can't we get paid and held to the standard that the public is holding us to?
Because the money's not there. It's the same reason why 911 or EMTs make $10 an hour, because that's what they make. That's why myself as a firefighter, I made $13.72 an hour to run into burning buildings. Because it was my job. I know it's also the same phone number from before. So.
Yeah, I called you earlier. My question is, the rates go up and down. The customer has money. They don't just go poor. They can go up. Why don't they go up right now?
All right,
you need to hang up on people to give you a good point. That's what you do.
I'm not even.
All right. You don't want to fight your customer. You're going to hang up on me because you don't like to hear that you should go to your customer because you're scared if you have $200 more to give me what I deserve, you may lose your customer or someone that's cheaper. That's the truth, and I can tell that right now.
I can guarantee there's nobody that's cheaper than me. I make 3.5% on profit margins, and I pay carriers more.
My point. That's why you won't go up, because you're going to be cheap on the rate.
There is no reason.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. I got all these tough guys. That guy's in Orlando. You're a 3-hour drive from me, buddy. don't get too tough. Oh, man. People are dumb. Here's the thing. Trucking is a business. It's a voluntary business. Do you know what that means? Because you're not handcuffed to your truck. If you are not making enough money being a truck driver, then get out of the job. If you're not making enough money as a freight broker, then get out of the job. Stop assuming that you know more than everybody else. You can't go to a shipper and just say, hey, you got to pay more because the truck wants more. This one truck wants more. Because you know what, Mr. Caller from a 904 area code, the guy who calls after you and takes a load because that's what he's offering, that's what it is. I don't go out and go to a customer and profit off of a national crisis. I don't go to my customer and say, hey, I know it doesn't actually cost any more money to ship this, but I need you to pay more so I could pay the driver more because I'm going to gouge during a national emergency. It doesn't make any sense. My headphones are messing up. It's crazy. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. But yeah, Purs Mall, just like you just said, he wants $20 an hour for flipping burgers. You can make a lot more money at McDonald's right now, it seems. I'm just not a big fan of the tough guys that want to just insinuate that I'm not going to go to a customer and ask for more money. You're right. I'm not going to a customer and asking more money for a carrier that doesn't need any more money. If the rate is bad and I'm not able to cover a load, then guess what I do? I go and get more money. But if the market is dictating a lower pay because all your bonehead friends are taking cheap loads, guess what happens? The rates are going to stay low. That's why you'd be better off, just like I said in the beginning of the show, you would be better off getting out of your truck and being home with your family while freight is low and horrible. That's the way it works. Jimmy said, haha, the guy on the phone is killing me. Yeah. Yeah, he got me a little bit. Because you could tell he was like a little guy too. I don't. It's just annoying. You can't insinuate. Like, I don't know what his experience in the industry is. But I can honestly say he doesn't understand the broker side of things and how the brokerage side of things works. And here's the difference. I was a carrier first. I was a driver and a fleet owner. I understand the carrier side. I understand the carrier side and how it works. But unlike all the people that sit out here and broker bash all the time, I had my own customers. Go figure that one. I got my own customers because I was unhappy with the brokers that I was working with at that time. What's up? You're on the air.
Hey, it's Kevin James. I got tired of listening to everybody else.
What's up, buddy?
All right. Look. It's like it goes back to all these drivers out here wanting to get paid and get free food and everything given to them because they think that they deserve it. Well, you know, you get what you deserve by putting the work in that you deserve to get paid for.
Right.
You know, like what you were saying about customers and brokers and everything else. I got a handful of brokers that I work for, mm-hmm. and that's just because I trust them and I know them. And then I got my own customers. Why? Because I got tired of brokers screwing around and, you know, going back and forth with certain people. So I got my own customers. That way I don't have to deal with them. Yeah. There's good brokers and there's bad brokers. You know this and I know it. So a lot of these people that are uneducated that are in this industry, you know, 62 flip-flops is what I call them because that's what they are. They got 62 mile an hour truck and they wear flip-flops. So that's the generation that's driving trucks nowadays.
I hear you. It's sad. It's sad.
I got a $900 a week truck payment. I got a $700 a week insurance payment, and I still make money.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't like what you're doing, then go find something else. I mean, hell, go be a door greeter at Walmart, get your shit, and get out.
I agree.
It's pretty essential. And then everybody's sitting here wanting, you know, to get paid hazard pay. If you're that scared to be out here, then don't be out here. Go home. I sat at home for 2 weeks because I wanted to.
Right.
You know, I'm out here moving oversized freight from Louisiana to Texas. You know, again, didn't pay what I wanted to pay.
Right.
But I sat for 6 hours, and the broker called me back and said, hey, you know what? I'll give it to you for this.
It's amazing.
And I said, well, you know, you're $300 short, but I'll take it.
It's amazing, right, that strategy actually works, holding off and not taking the first rate that's given to you, and you may get more money later. It's crazy.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, a lot of the times, too, okay, you're going to lose the load. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I sit with a laptop on my steering wheel, watching truckers, you know, truck stop, watching everybody, you know, live feed, so that way you get it instantly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as soon as the first one pops up, that's the rate that you like, call them.
Yeah.
You know, granted, there's going to be 10,000 other people doing the same thing that you're doing, but it's all about how you negotiate what you're worth.
Yeah. It's just crazy, man.
You know,
just
keep... Do I want to move something for a buck a mile? No. Can I? Absolutely not. I'll sit in the truck stop, pull the barbecue pit out, turn the tunes on, and drink beer.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't bother me a bit. And there's plenty of people out here on the road that have seen me do it in truck stops.
Well, I thank you for calling. And I
wait for a load.
I hear you. I thank you for calling, and I thank you for doing what you're doing and being an educated truck driver, because apparently that's a hard thing to find right now. Maybe that's probably what the reason is. Most of the educated truck drivers are already at home.
They're not.
Yeah.
So, all right, Steve, keep doing what you're doing. Love the show.
Thanks, buddy.
And talk again.
All right, see you.
All right.
All right. little guy from Orlando area, or Jacksonville, 904. That's Jacksonville. But you're welcome to call back. You tried to call while I was talking to him. I can't pick it up right away. Anyway, you can call back. Just be, you know, don't be a, what's the right word? Don't be an a-hole when you call. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, don't insinuate like you know more than someone that's been doing it for a long time, because clearly you don't. And then just trying to be a tough guy over the phone isn't really smart when people are on quarantine and really, really need to go to the gym. It's not smart. I overreacted, by the way. I'll fully admit that. But I just don't like keyboard or computer or phone, whatever you want to call it, tough guys. Not my thing. Jimmy Bryant said, on a serious note, you could tell people are hurting, needing more money. I've noticed more aggressiveness towards brokers. That's because capacity is, there's an abundance of capacity and the volume is dramatically low. And here's the kicker. If we're only halfway down that cliff right now and we haven't even got to the bottom, imagine what it's going to be like in a week. Imagine what it's going to be like in a week. It's going to be far, far worse, because I know everyone just thinks, oh, brokers, it's broker this, broker that. I get it. And if there was a way for me to prove that it doesn't actually work that way, I would, in a heartbeat. If there was a way that I could just say, okay, from now on, I'm going to teach all of you guys how to be brokers, so that way you understand that you're so wrong, then I would do it. But I can't, unfortunately, because I have to make a living for my wife and kids and family and all that stuff. We have another caller. Let's pick this one up. What's up, buddy? You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
What's up?
Hey, so quick question. I'm a recent owner operator.
Yeah.
And I've been told by a lot of guys, older guys, that they've been doing it for long, that, you know, don't haul for cheap and all that stuff. But
uh-huh.
I don't know, man. I'm not maybe economically at a position, you know, like they are, that they've been doing this for a while and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still out here trying to make a living. You know, I got a family and I have a child with special needs and stuff. So I just got to do what I got to do, you know.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm just trying to get some advice from someone who has more experience, like yourself. You know, because on one hand, I don't want to haul stuff for cheap, but on the other hand, you know, I gotta bring something home. You know, and just do what I love doing. You know what I mean?
Right. So here's a question for you.
I mean, any advice, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Here's a question. What is your operating cost per mile? Like, what does it cost you every time you turn on that truck for every mile you run?
Maybe 180 a mile. I'm okay. Happy with. I mean, $2 a mile would be perfect.
Yeah. Well, I said I'm not talking about profit. I'm talking about your fixed costs, your monthly truck payment, your insurance, your plates, all that stuff, plus your variable cost, driver pay, and all that stuff. That is what you need to figure out. So the goal is to try to get as close to that. You're not going to now. And what I do is I do round trip mileage. So when I routed my trucks, I didn't say, oh, I just need to get $2 a mile going out, $2 a mile for deadhead two. I said I need to make $2 a mile for every single run. So if I took a load, which didn't happen much, but if I took a load that was paying $1.50 a mile going out, I knew for me to get $2 a mile coming back, I had to make $2.50 a mile coming back. Because for me, as second I turn on that truck, that's when my time made. Right now, it's hard. I don't have any advice for anybody right now because I have no idea what the hell is going to happen with the trucking industry right now. But in terms of in the future, pulling a load for $1.50 inbound or outbound isn't cheap freight if you know you're getting $3 a mile coming back. You know what I mean? It's the whole backhaul, head haul thing that a lot of people argue with. But for me, the reason why I was successful and I was profitable as a trucking company owner was because I understood that I had a set rate that I had to make. You know, I had a set amount of mileage I wanted to run each truck per week, and I knew exactly how much that truck needed to make per mile in order to get to that goal. And I did it. And that was the thing that you have to account for. So the very first thing everybody has to do when you get involved in the industry is figure out your cost per mile, including driver pay. And then use that as your basis points. Anything more than that is profit. So if your cost to operate is $1.82 per mile, which is the national average price anyway, so you're not that far off, including driver pay. But that's the national average price for company drivers as well. So that includes a third of employee payroll tax, benefits, and all that stuff. So your costs are kind of maybe a little bit high, but right now with the current crisis, I have no idea because I only see the rates I'm moving. And to be honest, I don't even want to look at the other rates. I don't want to look at other lanes and just be more depressed about the industry. I know it's low, but.
One more question, sir, before I head on out. I want to learn more about this industry. Obviously, I don't know much. I'm still kind of getting the hang of it. Is there like a book or like a website or like anything I can go and then do some reading and use my gray matter to use?
No, I mean, I don't. Every now and then I do trainings. I'm not doing one, but I do offer a one-on-one consulting. If you've never been to my site has a lot of content anyway. Go to freightbrokerlive.com. You'll see a consulting tab there, but I've got a freight 101 section. So I talk about the figuring out your cost per mile. I've got a bunch of calculators I'm going to start putting up pretty soon that talk about different breakdowns for, cost per mile calculators and stuff like that. But other than that, no, I don't recommend a single freight broker course out there, except TIA. If you're looking to become a broker, the TIA course is probably the best one, but it's still, I mean, you're not going to learn the actual hard part of being a broker, which is sales. Everything else is super easy. You know, talking to carriers, super easy. Quoting a load, once you learn how to do it, super easy. The only hard part about being a broker is getting the customers. Once you get them, it's super easy. You just count your money all the time. That's it. But.
Gotcha. Well, I'm crawling as of right now, as it is, when it comes to the whole overview of the industry. So, but, you know, it's good to learn and master your craft the best you can, you know?
Yeah.
I guess.
But, man, hey, thanks for calling in. Thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you, sir. Thanks to you. God bless you and be safe.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Yeah, there's a really bad delay on this phone line. I don't know why. Normally, it's not that bad. All right. Wow, God, we got a lot of calls back and forth. We got a lot of people going back and forth. John said the guy is good here. Mr. Lampshade said, has no idea. Rowdy Duff said, people don't know their break even. That's a problem. I agree with you 100%. A couple of months ago, I had the guy, the hotshot guy that called in. He wanted broker transparency because this argument's been going on for years that brokers take too much money. I get it. And some do. Some brokers do. I think a broker that requires their agents produce $4,000 a week in profit, that's pretty crazy, especially when you figure they have several thousand employees. So if they have, let's just say conservatively, you could do the math. You know, say they have 5,000 employees and they have a minimum goal of $1,000 per employee to make per week profit. You can do the math. They are making a boatload of money a week, a boatload. Not all brokers do that. You know, I have settlements that I make $300, including all my agents, and then I have times where I make $5,000. It all depends on how much freight I can move and all that stuff. But in terms of being a carrier, a lot of people don't know their broker even rate. And I think that's something that's important on the broker side, because you need to understand a carrier's break even rate to be fair to them, to offer the right amount. You know, I can't tell you when the last time I've ever, you know, paid under $1 a mile. And with outbound Florida, if I ever move a load out of outbound Florida, I'm paying market. I can't afford to pay $3 or $4 a mile coming out, because I'll lose the customer. My job is to make sure I keep my customer. But TC Bog said, you desk jockeys keep saying no idea. You're just calling shippers to negotiate the rate. What's a comp? I don't know. So TC Boggs, why don't you go out and get your own customer and then call back? Okay. Or you know, go out and get your own customers and not worry about what brokers do. And then you won't even be concerned with whether brokers are good or bad. Doesn't make any sense. TC Boggs said the shippers will post to a central clearinghouse and the loads will click and go. Well, that's not going to happen. It won't happen. Because again, that's because you don't understand the industry. You don't understand what goes into the broker carrier or the broker customer relationship, or for that matter, because I can almost guarantee you don't have very big direct accounts, because there's still carrier shipper relationships as well. There's a reason why brokers are out there, whether you like it or not, but that's it. You guys are you guys are going hard at each other, but that's funny. Yeah, there'll never be a central clearinghouse for loads. We already have them. We have load boards. And just in case you didn't know, shippers can register to use load boards as well. And I don't know if you knew that. And carriers can book directly with shippers. That's how I actually landed one of my big customers, because they were a direct shipper and they used the DAT load board. And I was a carrier and I found them and I liked them and I kept working with them. And when I had my brokerages, I kept working with them. And then they were acquired and changed their name and I keep working with them. And to this day, guess what? My customers still occasionally post loads on the DAT load board. 6 or 7 years later, go figure that one out. We already have load boards. We already have centralized load boards. I do agree with you on the click and go. You know, the 5, 6 years from now, the whole trade is going to be done with marketplaces. But guys, I just realized it's 3:41. I'm done talking. This has been a very long show. I appreciate you guys all participating and communicating and all that. Wish you the best. To the caller from Jacksonville, I really hope sincerely that you get your hazard pay. yeah. Well, with that said, that's it. I will see you guys later. Check it out. Check my website out. That's what I meant to say. FreightBrokerLive.com.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.